Call the Senate Energy Committee. Time now is 1:45 on the 25th of July. Today we have, well, before I get to today, let me just jump ahead to Monday. Monday we're scheduled in this room at 2 o'clock, and the two lead items to begin with will be Governor Hickel and then Governor Knowles, and we'll continue from there as we kick that off. Today we have with us online number one Bonnie Harris with Department of Law and Mr. Richard Feinberg, who is listed as a principal investigator, research associates with ACPIRG, which is a nonprofit organization, began in 1974. A constituent voice for ordinary Alaskans dealing with issues as diverse as safe playgrounds, identity theft, fair utility rates, sustainable energy, safe routes to schools, and oil and gas issues. And one of the notes was that in the 1970s that this organization was the only non-lawyer participation in some of the tax rate cases. So, and today, I'm going to let Mr. Feinberg go through his bio and dossier of business affiliation. And then at the end of the table, we have Mr. Steve Porter, our consultant, to round out any comments, questions, and things of that nature. And of course, we have TransCanada with us, consultants from the administration, and I talked to the Commissioner of Revenue, Commissioner Galvin. He will be available as required. So with that, Ms. Harris, are you online?
Yes, Senator, I'm online.
Yes, and would you just go ahead and put yourself on the record so we would be prepared to hear from you?
Yes, this is Bonnie Harris. I'm Senior Assistant Attorney General in the Department of Law.
Yeah, and thank you very much. And next we go to Mr. Feinberg.
Richard Feinberg. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm here.
Yes, if you would put yourself on the record as well.
I am Richard Feinberg, an independent consultant from Esther A. Alaska, speaking to you from Fairbanks. And I very much appreciate the invitation.
Okay, and Mr. Feinberg, if you would just stand by for a moment, please, and then we're going to have Mr. Porter put himself on the record, please.
Yes, my name is Steve Porter. I am a consultant to Legislative Budget and Audit Committee and actually a former neighbor of Mr. Feinberg's in Esther.
Yeah, thank you. And we do have a quorum today with Senator Wagner, Senator Wilkowski, Senator Olson, Senator Hoffman, Huggins, Elton, and my good friend Fred Dyson from Eagle River. And with that, Mr. Feinberg, number one, if we could have you speak directly into the mic, and we will be proud to hear from you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just moved the mic closer. Does the volume work for you?
Yes, very good. Thank you.
Good. I want to thank you at the outset, having watched the time and the dedication that you folks have poured into the AGEA review. I feel truly privileged that you have asked me to share my thoughts and my concerns with you at this late date. Most of you in the room know me. By the way, I can see you from the LIO, so I keep trying to wave and say hi and nobody waves back, but I will live with that. I am an independent researcher. I came to Alaska in 69 to teach at the university, taught for 2 years and dropped that like a hot potato for my first love, which was journalism. Well, perhaps my second or third love, but we won't go into that. I wound up doing a report for ACPIRG in 1982 on state spending that led me into the bureaucracy at OMB, where I witnessed the TAP settlement closer than I care to recall, and that really motivates me to speak out at this this late date. I've been a consultant since leaving state service shortly after the Exxon Valdez in 1989. I was the last position I held at OMB was senior advisor to Governor Cooper for oil and gas policy, in which I did a great deal of work in oil and gas litigation, was able to see the early fruits of the TAPS settlement firsthand. On leaving the administration, did some reports for the legislature and have been a consultant since then. I am proud to be working with ACPIRG. As you mentioned at the start, they have done yeoman work in some of the same areas. I think for biography that's should suffice if you have no questions.
Yeah, and if you would, just very quickly, Mr. Feinberg, if you would emphasize the point that you're not advocating for any course of action based on a 50C3 and the implications of that.
Yes, I have. I'm viewing my role in this as educational factual. I have not taken a position. I have concerns, but I am not advocating, and I am not associated in any way, and the ACPIRG, the small funding to this project is completely individual contributions. So as far as I know, I'm completely free as a bird.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Feinberg. And if you would please proceed with your points that you want to make to the committee today.
Yes, what I will do is I will just do briefly a background and then five broad points. The first is that three decades of TAP's operations demonstrate beyond any doubt that the state cannot afford to get the tariff part of the gas line proposal wrong. If we do get it wrong, the state stands to lose billions of dollars in revenue, that's B-boy billions, and North Slope competition will again be inhibited, jeopardizing future development. I have been very close to the TAPS case and the oil side through the years, sometimes right in the middle of it. I watched the AGIA process from that side coming over to the gas side. I have been learning the differences, and it promotes me to speak in part. Reviewing it, it feels very eerily similar to me to 1985 when we settled the TAPS case. I don't want to harp on that. I want to stay on the gas side. Be happy to go into it if anyone wants to hear it. But my first substantive point is that the natural gas contracts and the tariff issues are complicated like you wouldn't believe. And I know the incredible amount of time you put in going through the AGIA documents, but the level of complication and detail of the contracts, the points they turn on, how it plays out and gets spilled into the tariff, it is incredibly, it's orders of magnitude more complicated than I believe we have, you've gotten to yet. And the gas line project is huge, like you can scarcely imagine. To deal with the critical issues, information is critical. This sounds like a truism, but it's a central point, and I think it will be clearer when I'm through my testimony. The AGIA proposal, I have tremendous respect for the time and the dedication of the people who have crafted it and their intents. That said, I am concerned that the proposal lacks essential safeguards to ensure that the FERC process will deliver the goals that AGEA promises in the summary of low tariffs. A critical component to attaining this goal would be guaranteed access to all the critical information in a timely manner, all the information that we would need to ensure state revenues and the maintenance of open competition that hinge on the attainment of lowest reasonable tariffs. I would distinguish low tariffs from lowest reasonable. Lowest reasonable, if you stop to think of it, could be very high. So you have to look at your language very carefully as to what is promised and what we may be able to get. Now, I have five bullet points. I don't know if they were handed out to the committee or not. Have you received those 5 points?
Yes, stand by one. They're being handed out now, Mr. Feinberg. And if you would just continue to hold, and I'd like to welcome Senator Thomas with us at this point in time, and Senator Terrio has been with us for the last 10 minutes. Please continue, Mr. Feinberg.
Yes. I sent you the bullets so that you will have a sense of how my report works. When I prepared the report for ATPERG, I thought the best thing to do was going to be to try to take you into the world as I see it, and the result was a long, dense report at this late date. I then condensed it into 4 pages of a bullet summary, still too tight, but I think all of the points I would speak on today are in those 4 pages of the bullets, and they wrap up then for today. I condensed that into 5 points, which I will speak on right now, and I'll not comment in detail on them because in a lot of the points, many of you know a lot of the material, and I want to be of service to you. So I'll simply go through the points in a way that I hope will provoke some questions. And at that point, I'll know what you need to hear from me. The first is, I believe the tariff process opens with a bad beginning, the recourse or the ceiling tariff. And that is because it's a ceiling tariff, so it's not a low tariff. It's the way the system is. The next stage gets even worse. There's a negotiated tariff with the shippers. As I see it, that has 2 structural defects. These are built into the FERC process. It's one of the reasons we artfully crafted the AGEA remedies, but I don't believe they got there. I think they're off target, and in part they may be off target because every action has an equal and opposite reaction. It's not really science, but that seems to be where I perceive things differently from others. So the 2 defects.
Yep. Mr. Feinberg, we have a question from Senator Wilikowski.
Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hi, Richard. Good to hear from you. Thank you for coming and testifying. You were involved in helping us write AGEA, and are you saying now that we overlooked some things when we wrote that?
Through the chair, Senator Wilichowski, I was not involved in writing it. I have worked with the Palin folks in earlier stages. I was not involved in the crafting.
you weren't involved in, and I'm, maybe I'm getting ACES and AGEA confused, but.
Yes.
So you weren't at all advised in AGEA?
I was proud to be part of the ACES proposal. I have not been involved in the AGEA process, other than as an observer, as you have been, and the administration has been most graceful in speaking to me, most generous in their time. But no, I have not been, I was not a part of the crafting process, so it would be a mistake to think I had parted company in that way.
Okay, I apologize for that. I knew you were actively involved in things kind of blur in the last couple of years. But I mean, I guess I'll ask the question a different way. Are you saying that we overlook some things in AGEA that we should now be going back and trying to fix?
Senator Wielichowski, through the chair, now, pardon me if I pronounce your name wrong. I know I'm not the first to do so. I would say my answer is yes and no. Yes, I am saying that I believe that there are problems with the proposal. Whether they were overlooked, how that happened, I am not able to say because I'm not part of the process. I don't think they have had sufficient attention. So in that sense, they have been overlooked. I am results-oriented at this point, which leaves me in a peculiar position as to what we should do. I can't take you from here to there and make a decision on the remedies. I can only, I believe, what is most useful for me to do and what is proper for me to do is to make sure you're clear on what I believe the defects are. I have probably heard on gavel to gavel, often replaying it, 30% of the hearings. I've been to all of the Fairbanks ones. I've spent an incredible amount of time taking notes very carefully, heard some of the gavel to gavel live, but to try to second guess every piece of information you have and tell you what you need to do going forward is beyond my ken. And I don't purport to do that.
What? Is that a we have a follow-up, Mr. Feinberg, from Senator Wielichowski.
And I'm just trying to. I mean, I'm kind of results oriented too. At least I try to be. From your report, you say the voluminous AGEA proposal lacks systematic safeguards to protect against the possibility that unscrupulous parties might use various accounting devices to artificially elevate reported costs and filed tariffs. And I guess what I'm trying to get at is there something that you think we need to do under AGEA to fix that, or do you have a solution for that?
Senator Wielichowski, through the chair, I can tell you what remedy I would craft. I cannot speak to how that plays out in the broad political mix, and one of my concerns in that regard is the dilemma of if we don't keep TransCanada in the game, we face Denali without the possibility of a possibly better party for us to play off of. I do not presume to make that judgment. I simply want to tell you the gravity of what I think AGEA lacks. So as you make your decision, you have all the information you need.
Thank you, Mr. Feinberg. And Mr. Porter, you have a comment?
Thank you, Chairman Huggins. My name again is Steve Porter, LBNA consultant. Actually, as Mr. Feinberg moves through his report and his recommendations, Senator Wilkowski, I think he'll actually more define, because it is results-oriented, it's actually looking forward, and he has some very good recommendations on accounting issues and concerns about audit that I think will come out in his presentation.
Good, thank you. And next we'll go to Senator Elton, then Senator Dyson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks, Richard, for being a presenter. I don't know how to say this precisely, so if you need clarification, please don't hesitate to ask. I mean, one of the decisions that we have to make is, do we issue a license? In the absence of issuing a license, the default comparable here is the Denali proposal. And so I guess in your presentation, it would be extremely helpful to me if you could say whether or not the problem that you identify in the AGEA license proposal that we have here is also a problem with Denali. My assumption is that it will be because we don't have a detailed Denali project proposal. And so as you go through these points on AGEA, I'd appreciate it if on each point you would say either this is not a problem with Denali, you don't know whether it's a problem with Denali, or it probably is a problem with Denali. Because for me, the decision to issue a license or not issue a license, the default position is the other highway project. So I need to be assured from your presentation that that the problems you identify with AGEA aren't also problems with Denali, or we don't know whether they're a problem with Denali because we don't have enough information.
Senator Elton, through the chair, I see you still speaking, but the sound cut off. Excuse me.
I'm sorry, Mr. Feinberg. I could not hear you. Could you say again?
I'm not sure what happened. I just lost the last few words from Senator Elton,
Okay. And
I could not hear him. I do know the question was, can he clarify, or can I clarify, do I think the problems I intend to identify refer to Denali also, greater, lesser, or do I not know? And then it cut out, and I don't know what his final comment was.
I thank you, Mr. Feinberg. I think you got the gist of it. I'm just trying to get to the issue of what is uniquely a problem with AGEA that is not a problem with other proposals.
Through the chair, Senator Elton, first of all, I think that question, we're in a direct lay our cards on the table. I want you to be clear that I would hope you could stipulate that I am fully recognizing how the problems relate to Denali. If I don't know clearly, I will try to tell you, but I do not see broadly. First of all, I want to say that I do not see the situation as either or, but having been a policy advisor to the governor on oil and gas, that's one of the reasons I'm reluctant to try to make policy recommendations to you. I'm not blind to the implications, but I realize how much information you have, and at this late date, my job is to factor out and make sure I'm not biased by my policy judgments. I believe I'm not, but I'm not certain that you need my policy judgments or you want them. I want to make sure you have what I know as you make yours. With that said, I will stipulate that almost every problem with the AGEA proposal would be equally bad or worse with Denali. I assume that from the get-go, so I'm not blind to it in the least. And I, the one note I do have in my report down at the bottom is be crystal clear that I am not endorsing Denali. That is one for the same problems that I have here. And it's a paradoxical position, Senator Elton, if that's not clear, if you want me to try to do better with that, I can try. But does that respond to your question, sir?
Through the chair, it does. I guess what I'm doing is I'm taking to heart your stipulation that each and every issue that you're talking about in your presentation or in your paper applies equally to the Denali proposal, unless you say otherwise.
Through the chair, Senator Elton, given the complexity of the subject, I would say almost everyone does, because if we took the four pages of the bullets and I went point by point, I might find one or two that it's not true of, but I would hazard a guess off the top of my hat that it's true of 95%, if not 100.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Mr. Feinberg, in the interest of brevity, if there's a difference in the two projects in your statement, just point that out quickly, and we'll just move on from there. Next, Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you. And I've been reading your report here for some time, Richard, and it's really quite insightful. When you finish today, I would like you to come back and circle back and summarize for us the problems that are structural in the agreement, if any, that we need to jump on and fix now, as opposed to the main part of what I've read here, that we need to be really wary in supervising the tariff establishment process, which I think you imply could be done after the license is granted, and that the main impetus is for the state to get its act together and be very, very diligent and equipped in that. But I'm asking that when you get finished, that you summarize for us what, if anything, we need to do now, and differentiate that between the things that we need to be wary of and getting prepared for in the interim.
Senator Dyson, through the chair, when I summarize my bullets, I believe at the end of that would be the time for me to give you four questions that I think need to be asked when I'm through my quick bullets, and I'm referring to my five bullets, not four pages of bullets. Let me be clear, the five you have on the one page. When we've got that in whatever detail you need, then we'll move forward. But where I believe I am in this dialogue is that you would only get to the question of whether we move forward and put fixes in later. I would not recommend that until I had answers to questions I have not seen asked and answered yet. And I would need the answers to that and have comfort before I would recommend going forward with my fixes. Very definitely, I recommend my fixes, but I would not interpret that to be I'm recommending going forward with the fixes. I think the problems are serious enough that if we can't get answers, I'm not certain that you would decide to go forward or that I would recommend that, but let me get through it so you can see what I mean. They're different classes of questions in my mind.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Feinberg, and please continue. It is nearing 10 after the hour, and we're moving slowly, so I'm going to put you on slow cruise control and continue.
let me summarize the bullets, and then I think we can take it from there and throw it purely to question, Mr. Chairman. The next stage is even worse, the negotiated tariff. The recourse negotiated tariff is supposed to reduce tariffs, but there's good reason to think that would not be the case when we're negotiating with the shippers, because the shippers are the producers. And we know from TAPS, producers do not reduce their tariffs. They go for high tariffs. It's paradoxical, but we have 31 years. We have the state Supreme Court back to the RCA to know that we do, and the FERC, and all the concerns for 25 years have been borne out by every jurisdictional decision in spades. So with the shippers in that position of being producers, we have the next problem then, as the next stage is even worse, is as a general rule, there are no refunds on negotiated tariffs. So now we're going into it from a high tariff that we're supposed to negotiate down, that they're supposed to negotiate down, but it's the same producers who we've seen favor a high tariff. And there are no refunds in the game, and we've also seen that refunds are not an adequate fix on the oil side, but on the gas side, guess what? They may not be there. That's why the next stage is even worse. Then, and in that one then, AGEA could be worse than Denali conceivably.
Yep. I see. Mr. Feinberg, we have a question from Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Richard, let me just say, I've worked with you in the past many times, and I've always found you to be very independent, and you've always provided me with very good guidance. I just wanted to say that for the record. So, but in your analysis or your research, have you found whether there are typically higher tariffs for independent pipelines or producer pipelines? One of the
Senator Wilikowski, people are having troubles. Pull your mic a little closer. Good. Okay.
One of the arguments that we heard was that an independent pipeline is motivated to have cost overruns, motivated to have higher costs because their tariff is based on the higher cost. Has your research shown anything about producer-owned pipelines versus independent pipelines in terms of tariffs?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, very interesting. My research is not once again, I was apparently talking over you, Senator Wilikowski, through the chair. Do you need to repeat a piece of that?
Yeah, just basically, have you done any research regarding the tariffs between independent pipeline producers and independent pipeline owners and producers in terms of what the tariffs are for the pipelines that they build and whether one's higher than another? Did you get that, Richard?
I got one's higher than the other,
Stopped. Have you done any research whether independent pipeline builders have higher or lower or similar tariffs to pipelines that are built by producers?
Thank you. Now we're fully clear. Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski. Barry Pulliam had a table, I believe, in his June 4th presentation. He had a 19% average reduction. I simply calculated the average from three independent pipelines. And then there was a fourth, which was in a netherworld status and is very important. And his showed the tariff holding even, no reduction. I went out and looked at that tariff and found it increased highly due to cost overruns. That was the Alliance pipeline, and that's important because it was producer financed, and then sold to the independents. It's a line from Western Canada, as you probably know, to Chicago. So the evidence is, yes, there is some reduction from independents in general, is answer A. B, but when it has close affiliation to the producers, which this pipeline by definition will have, by geologic and geographic definition, and who owns, who produces the gas, the evidence is very limited. Now, you've had others who have done work for you, who know more than I from the tax side, and they warn that there are very few examples because natural gas had an attorney general's ban on producer-owned lines for many years, and there aren't many of them. So the one big example we've got is the Alliance line, which is a good one because it was huge, which means to say it cost all of $5 billion and was so big that Pipeline and Gas Journal had an article that, when you read it online, took 19 different pages to run of all the details of how huge a cross-country pipeline is. They had cost overruns that pushed the tariff up. It's a $5 billion line. So the evidence then is somewhat disconcerting, and Lee Raymond, chairman of Exxon Mobil, CEO, retiring in, I think, late 05. I know from a very knowledgeable source that he directly told that source, who is a trustworthy source who I cannot name, but she is well acquainted with the Exxon people, close to them and accurate, and Lee Raymond said specifically our line would be built on the Alliance model. So that's the limited research I've done. Again, these are very superficial, but that's my research. So from there...
Yeah, Mr. Feinberg, stand by one. We just asked Mr. Porter to give us a copy of Mr. Pulliam's report, or get with Mr. Feinberg and document whatever study we're talking about, so, and we'll get that to members. And please continue, Mr. Feinberg.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe I have that footnoted in my report. You can't talk and chew gum very well. I don't whistle at all. So there'll be a footnote that would give you the page to the June 4th Pulliam where he has four tariffs, but not all the rest of that background. And others have given me more background on it. That's as far as I could go. Okay. Viewed in historical context, the negotiated recourse tariff system appears to me to have much in common with a slow-moving train wreck. I don't want to be harsh or critical. There are many able and well-meaning people at FERC with great skills. But like many public servants, oil is difficult to handle, and gas likewise, they have a lot on their hands. As to the slow-moving train wreck, my phrase, can you say Enron? Can you say BP price fixing in the propane market? The timing of the FERC response demonstrates that when they went to the recourse negotiated framework in 96 to free up the market, the free enterprise, we ran into many problems. Meanwhile, on the oil side, can you say TAPS, which isn't the negotiated, it's a completely different system, but is a reason to be skeptical of our friends at FERC as much as we may respect them and be leery of the outcomes? I think so. The remedies then, and this will wrap up my points for today. Again, I want to say the remedies do not necessarily, I don't know that they can be reached and can work and will work, but I believe it is serious the question of how we deal with it is information. And I am deeply troubled that we do not have sufficient information to cope with the problem. So, remedy number one, to engage constructively in this arcane process, the state needs access to timely and complete information, all information. We don't have it. And I see no assurance that we would have it. And I lived the TAPS case. I spoke to a lawyer who had worked with the state for many years last night, and also with the industry to check things out, who knew the TAPS case, the royalty case. He immediately came to the information problem, said, no, they got to fix that. He's not involved now, but he confirmed my concerns. And he's worked both sides of the street. Information is crucial. And number two, if AGEA is set in motion, we have to begin preparing immediately to work on the cost estimates to make sure the recourse tariff doesn't set the bar too high. Next, we have to establish ongoing accounting and oversight. And as you know from 06, those of you who were here, we thought we could handle the PPT, that the accounting and oversight would be adequate. I tried to weigh in at the end to say I thought it was not from the outside. And as you know, that's what you were back in the special session that last year to fix. We did not have the accounting mechanisms, and we couldn't handle the costs. It went out of control, and that's why we had to do ACES. We did not have control of our facts, even in a relatively simple matter in our state, not before the FERC in D.C., like tariffs. Again, the level of facts and information is incredibly difficult to understand, and that's what I'm trying to convey without getting you into the weeds of the details. So we need then an accounting and oversight mechanism to deal with two kinds of problems. One is reporting in gray areas where the producers and the shippers both will have an interest in maximizing their revenue and may lead them to high tariff. And the pipeline company does, obviously. And producers may not negotiate them down. And legitimately then, pushing the bounds to their own ends is one problem. Then the one that no one has spoken of, to my knowledge, is the inappropriate gaming of the system and what that means. So when you have a cost that isn't there, that's where the majors differ from the independents, and that's why you need all the information. Now, I've tried to do it in summary form. I believe it is all in my four-page bullets in clear form, but in detail, and that would get you to the report with more detail. I hope I haven't blurred it or not hit the highlights adequately. I should say that Mr. Porter, with whom I have never worked, he reminds me from time to time, we're from Esther. I don't believe I ever knew the gentleman and was very surprised to learn that. We've never worked together. We find that independently, we have come to the identical conclusion on that point. Thank you.
Yep. Mr. Feinberg, question. I'll go back to your Bravo element in your outline. And there's a provision in TransCanada's proposal that has the allowance of the producers taking an equity share in the pipeline. And you can see scenarios where they may own greater than 50%. But let's assume they own 50% for conversation's sake. What concerns do you have in the conversation of tariffs in that respect, but because it appears both pipelines, whether it be Denali or whether it be AGIA, could be controlled by the producer owners of the gas, if you will. Can you hear Mr. Feinberg?
I believe so. I think there's a time delay, and now I'm figuring out. That's why I thought I was talking over people. Thank you, sir. Pardon me, Chairman Huggins. I cannot precisely answer that without seeing real numbers. I would refer you, and I can't find the day off the top of my hat, but I heard Representative Samuels say it again and again, we cannot know the outcomes without knowing the numbers. They can come back on you and work the opposite way. I think roll-in tariffs are a good thing. I think the limited equity, the cap on the equity is good. At what point the producer's interest in a low tariff vanishes because it has an ownership interest in the pipeline? That's incredibly complicated modeling that I do not do. I only know that we ignore it at our peril, and I know that from TAPS.
Yep, thank you. And there's a question from Senator Wagner.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, I've got a question on that. You talk about ownership by the producers and TransCanada. Isn't it much more to the state of Alaska's advantage if we have to have equity by the producers? Wouldn't they be more likely at 50% equity of the total pipeline cost to put more pressure on Canada to hold down the tariff than to increase the tariff? Unless they own 100% of the pipeline, I don't see the advantage that the companies would have to have a higher tariff. You would think they'd be working toward as low a tariff as they could get, because that's to their advantage on shipping their gas to market.
Senator Wagner, through the chair, I believe that I cannot answer that without going through incredibly complicated, well, not incredibly, I'm using superlatives here too freely, very complicated. What you find is the interest turn on very subtle things, and one of them that they turn on that we don't consider at all is whether their income tax effect is correctly understood. There are tax benefits that we don't have that would change that answer conceivably, and we just are not fit to model it. But I can't tell you, I know that logically your question is sound, but I can tell you from every model I have run and what I have dealt with, and I guess I would respond as a policy witness in the RCA TAPS case, the last person to testify in the case, the only policy witness, and aside from one representative of DNR on the other side, the only person from this state to testify in the RCA case. Every expert was from outside the state except myself. I was on the prevailing side and was quoted in the decision. I played a very small role, but I was expert in the area. I want to say that I believe if we sat and did the numbers and spent the time, you would find a lot of surprises and you would not be quite so comfortable with your what seems to be an absolutely reasonable proposition. There are variables in there we can't control. One of them is the tax benefits and how they play out.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Feinberg. And Mr. Porter, you have some comments on that subject.
Senator Wagner, through the chair. As I was, over the last couple of days, Mr. Feinberg and I have had some very good discussions on this, and we have found a lot of agreement. One of the things that came out of that discussion is that the seems to be the only party that's most interested in the lowest possible tariff for certain is the state. Now, the FERC is going to come forward with a reasonable tariff. AGIA sets certain parameters. The Denali project has argued that they're going to have an incentive to make a low tariff, but we do not know what that answer will be. TransCanada has come forward with a reasonable tariff from their standpoint, but the party that can protect the interests of the state most effectively is the state. And one of the things that Mr. Feinberg recommends that I wholeheartedly support is to basically participate very strongly and aggressively in that tariff process to make sure that, to the best of our ability, we try to drive that tariff down to as low as possible in terms of participating before the FERC and before the NEB.
Thank you. And we have a question for Senator Thomas and Senator Elton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Richard, for being here today. Information. Yeah, we've collected a bunch of information. As you know, when you were in my office the other day, we talked about the stacks of stuff that were not only in my office, but some that you were looking at to try and extract some of this information. And as we approach the topic of tariffs, I find in your, on page 2 of this, the expanded bullets, I guess they are, after going through some of what's already been discussed, you have Port Authority / LNG, the good news. And although I agree with you, as do many others in the state, obviously, and many here in Juneau that do support an in-state gas line as well as in-state use of gas, that would be a great opportunity. However, for whatever reason, it didn't get to the gate just 8 months ago, and it's not really something that is being considered with this decision that we're scheduled to make. And also, a concern that I have is when you talk about exporting of gas, we've already had our United States Senator, at least one of them, talk about the reality of that happening, whether it would or not, as well as Congress as it discusses outer continental shelf drilling and the requirement that if that does go forward, that the product that is comes from that would be channeled into the United States, obviously to give us energy independence. All that aside, I'm looking at your numbers on the liquefaction plant, and we had a discussion the other day here on whether somebody was, you know, off in their calculations, and of course everybody's got a little different model, but I'm unfamiliar with the $21.1 billion number for the liquefaction plant, and if in fact that is accurate, that one piece of the puzzle there doubles the price of the LNG project through the state of Alaska, because we're talking about a $12 billion pipeline and an $8 billion, at least in the Port Authority's plan, dollar figure for the liquefaction plant. So that's $20 billion. If, in fact, the plant is $21, that doubles it. What does that do to the tariff in your estimation at that point in time?
Senator Thomas, through the chair. I believe I will find that those numbers were taken from Barry Pulliam's June 20th at pages 18 through 24, 30, and 54 to 55. And I actually have that at my fingertips. I actually can find it. Might be able to get that number for you. My first answer there, though, I would like to be very clear that as daunting as a liquefaction plant is, it's inside a fence in one place. And I've followed TAP's construction again and again. I did a news story, and there's a question, which valley are you in? We're doing this just fine, but over in the next valley they weren't, and you didn't know what the facts were, and it delayed my reporting. I reported on the pipeline and did over 105 stories. I don't think I ever did a retraction because my facts are good when I report them. But getting the facts in a remote site is very difficult, which is, again, what pipeline and gas journal in their long article on the difficulties of the Alliance pipeline, why the overruns. When you're doing the liquefaction plant, it's inside a fence, it's in one place, maybe more controllable. What that did to the tariff, that's on the 4.5 BCF on page 30 of Pulliam. So it would be his bottom line on the tariff, and I don't know where that is. And again, you've all been doing this longer than I. You may be able to find that number better than I. It certainly would kick the tariff up if it happened. It may be, in my estimation, knowing a little bit about the travails of pipeline cost overruns, having watched TAPS very closely, I think pipeline cost overruns, we're looking at 26 to 46 billion are the numbers we're seeing on the AGEA project and much of it through Canada. It's one or the other, and I think we need more focus on it. I don't have the answers.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and thank you, Mr. Feinberg. And next, we have a question from Senator Elton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, a question for Mr. Porter. I mean, you said you agreed with Mr. Feinberg on the need to aggressively participate in the tariff issues, and I just want to make sure that I understand. Will that require a change in the legislation before us, or that is just an obligation the state incurs, whether or not a license is issued?
Yeah. Through the chair, Senator Elton.
Any pipeline project.
if a license is issued or Denali or whatever, it does not, the ability and the need and the responsibility to participate in that process is one that the state has the right to do. And I think the administration was very clear that AGEA does not require the state to support the terms listed in the application, and so it would require no changes to AGEA for the state to be able to represent itself before the FERC or the NEB.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yep. Mr. Feinberg, if you could go to page 2 on your executive summary and go from the bottom up, your third bullet, which addresses cost estimates for the project, and use TransCanada's number of 26.5, and then you go further to say that median construction cost estimate would be $46 billion. Could you give us a little insight into those numbers and what your point you're trying to make to us?
Chairman Huggins, the $46 billion, I even jotted a specific note so I'd know where it was, and I'm afraid you haven't come up with the question. I will not. Yes, I do have. That's the P50 construction number in the Goldman Sachs, the analysis and the findings, and the P50 would be the median number. They're saying it is $46 billion. What that means, how that plays in, I don't know. We do know that we're looking at cost overruns up to 40%. That's why we negotiated this wonderful arrangement with TransCanada that got them to eat part of the cost overruns in a reduced rate of return, which every action has an equal and opposite reaction. That means TransCanada is going to be highballing every number it can legally and appropriately in the recourse tariff, because it's going to have the highest estimates possible so that it won't have to get lower rate of return. So every action has an equal and opposite. I don't know when you all may have considered that question. It jumps out at me at the last minute. I began working on this in early June and presumed many of the questions would be answered, and I'm concerned at this date that some of them aren't. Maybe you have an answer to that question. I certainly don't. But that's the P50 Goldman Sachs, and that I think means we better expect cost overruns, since our conventional wisdom is that TransCanada was probably aggressive and a little bit low in their cost, so we're going to be a bit higher. But exactly what that P50 number meant, you've heard from them in great detail, and you shouldn't I should not waste your time trying to guess on what the number means.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Feinberg. In that respect, on the same page, you, on your last bullet, address loan guarantees. Are there anything, any comments or any insightful information that you have on loan guarantees that you'd like to bring to attention to the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I certainly would. I am very concerned. This is tremendous fun, I must tell you. I'm just talking over you right now, Mr. Chairman, and I'm sure you're not hearing it that way. The sound's coming at a different speed. I hope I was not talking over you. Be sure to let me know if I am not understanding the delay in the time. I have a serious concern that be a serious question, which is why would the state want to tie up the federal loan guarantees on the back end on cost overruns when it could cut the cost on the front end? And we get it for sure, where if it's a backstop for the cost overruns, we may not need it, but if we use it to finance loans, we get the loans at a lower rate, at a lower cost on the debt side, and the tariff comes down. So the state, it appears to me, has traded off the gain of the financing of the loan guarantees. We've given our share of that gain to the pipeline companies. Did we need to do that? It's not evident to me. I haven't seen anything to indicate why. Again, if you people have heard it, I would love to know the answers, and I don't wish to presume on your time. I just want to make sure I'm not backtracking something that you have the answer to, but that question jumped out at me, and I haven't found the answer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Feinberg, and to be quite frank, we have heard some parties that were sensitive to the same issue that you just pointed out, and I do think it's something that we as a state need to look at, because we're the benefactor of lower tariffs, as would other parties be. Are there other questions for Mr. Feinberg? Mr. Porter, you have any comments to this point?
Mr. Chairman, may I put in one quick follow-up there?
Yes, Mr. Feinberg.
I would use that loan guarantee question as a proxy for a number of issues. I've spent many years as a reporter. Senator Elton and I were in the news desk at the same time in a different life. And I want to be very clear on the difference between what I know and what I think I know, and then what I think I know with real certainty, even though I don't have the facts and I couldn't report it as news. And that is the loan guarantee question you can take as a proxy for a number of issues that I can't even begin to tell you on the gas side, but I know they're there from the literature I've looked at. And on the oil side, I knew them. I have no question that many other questions like that are there. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Feinberg. And I'm sorry, Mr. Porter, I think I asked if you had any comments, but I didn't see your response.
Mr. Chair.
And sorry, Senator Elton has a question.
Just a comment. I don't want anybody around the table to think less of Mr. Feinberg simply because he and I had a past association.
Thank you. Mr. Porter.
Thank you, Chairman Huggins. I think the key points that Mr. Fine brings forth today are that the tariff was very important to TAPS, and because of the BTU equivalent basis issues that we have before us, that it takes a substantial amount of more gas to be shipped through a pipeline than it did oil for the same BTU equivalent. That the importance of the tariff on a gas pipeline is substantially more important to the state than it was even with TAPS, and as the legislature knows, TAPS was a very important issue. So the tariff is something that the state should be very vigilant about in terms of developing its team to be ready to participate and represent the state's interest before that, both the FERC and the NEB. And even after that TAPS tariff has been determined, the I think the other thing that Mr. Feinberg mentions is that from an accounting standpoint, from an audit and accounting standpoint, the state needs to make sure that it has as much information as it can avail itself of, and it utilizes that information to make sure that the accounting for that tariff is properly accounted for, so that the state can't be I won't necessarily call it mischarged, but say for example if a corporation has a cost, and that cost can be either attributed to one accounting one portion of the pipeline or another portion of the pipeline, they're going to choose to account for that in the way that best serves their interests, not the state's interests. And that's totally legal, but the state ought to be looking at all the costs associated with the pipeline and make sure that it protects its interests, even in the accounting section of the after the tariff. Those are the two major points I think that are very important that Mr. Feinberg makes.
Yeah, thank you. And Mr. Feinberg, do you have any other comments or summation that you'd like to make at this time?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have two, if I may. On the question of export to Asia, I respectfully take a different view from Senator Stevens. I don't want to waste your time on it, but I want to let you know that I had on page 23 of my report some reasons I take that different view. As a latecomer, whether we could get the export license, I don't want to waste time on it. I just want to let you know that that is there. I would like to share with you my questions going to the next level that I would have to have answered to determine if I would support a project. Could I give you those questions so that you would know, get a feeling for where I'm coming from? The first is, when we know the average litigated case is 50 months and a contested settlement is 3 years, what's the average if the rate base...
Yeah, Mr. Feinberg, stand by. I would ask you to put those questions in writing and get them to Ms. Long, and we will get those distributed to the committee members in interest of time and specificity, so we don't get confused in our making notes on your questions. So respectfully, if you would do that for us, please.
Thank you very much. I would be happy to do so.
Thank you. Thank you. Do you have any other things that you would like to say, Mr. Feinberg, in summation?
I believe that Mr. Porter has said very clearly what I said in the report, in the bullet report that I've high-graded. I'm very grateful for your time, and truly, in the last 3 years, I've watched the legislature grow and step up to oil issues. And I thank you for your interest as a member of the public watching you work. I am very respectful for the time and the effort you've done. And with that, I think the best way I can thank you is to shut up and let you get on with what you need to do.
Well, thank you, Mr. Feinberg. And I know that this is a tremendously detailed subject and hard to communicate over teleconference, but we appreciate your continued engagement in the process, both as a professional, as an Alaskan citizen. And with that, I would say thank you very much. And if you would please tell Mr. Jim Sykes I said hello, I would appreciate that. We have a question from Senator Wagner.
Not a question, much of a statement, just in case Mr. Feinberg isn't aware of it. Congress has been here lately showing some interest in going back and revisiting the exportation and the allowance of us to export our oil. And if you want to do a little research, that's pretty evident, because Congress had a vote the other day to do exactly that and reestablish that ban on exporting Alaska oil. So that's a kind of your statement on the export license is kind of predated by that. So you might want to take a look at that.
Mr. Chairman, I've done some work on that, but I'll respond directly to you, Senator Wagner, on that. Thank you.
Yeah,
it's just a point of interest you might want to take account of.
Yeah, and thank you, Mr. Feinberg, again on behalf of the committee. And what we'd like to do, if there are any points that the administration would like to round out informationally, or TransCanada, that without belaboring the point, we're scheduled for 3 o'clock, and it's about 5 minutes till. Yeah. So there are no comments at this point in time from either the administration or TransCanada. Are there any final comments from Senator Dyson?
Yeah, I would like to make clear a conversation I had earlier with Mr. Porter. As I remember our conversation, you really agree with Mr. Feinberg that the state needs to be very prepared to do battle and protect the state's interests on the tariffs, no matter who builds the pipe, and that we have some time here to get prepared before that'll be a real issue. I'm saying that poorly, but answer the question I'm trying to ask, please.
Senator Dyson, through the chair, I agree with exactly what you said. The time to prepare, I think that on that issue, I think is the state needs to begin to plan now for how it approaches it. So I would get started fairly soon on developing my team to, or if you're developing a team to look at the tariff, both your financial team and your economics team, I would start building them now, because it'll take you a couple of years to be effectively prepared.
And if I may follow up, Mr. Chair, Mr. Feinberg, as I heard it, said part of being able to do a really good job on looking after the state's interest is getting the right information, accurate information, in a timely way. Is there anything that we need to tweak in this contract to assure that the state has access to that information?
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, the most effective way to get all the information is to have an ownership piece of the pipe. Stepping back from that, you have some fairly good regulations that are currently on the books, but you will probably find that down the road, even those regulations are insufficient for all the information you would like to have. But there's nothing currently in AGEA that I would change today. I think that you really need to sit down and think through the process as you look forward. I don't think it's a requirement necessarily of a change of AGEA as much as it is, as you look forward to any pipeline, what kind of information does the state want to have?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, thank you, Senator Elton.
As a follow-up to the last question, and I'm assuming there's nothing in AGEA that would prevent us from changing regulations in the future when it comes to information access.
Through the chair, so long as you're changing laws of general application as it relates to any pipeline and all projects are treated equally, you should be on very safe ground.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, and thank you. And now I'd like to go quickly to Ms. Harris. And number one, thank you for being with us, but more importantly, are there any points that you'd like to clarify or expound upon in a short period of time?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not with regard to Mr. Feinberg's report.
Okay, thank you. Is there any other items at this point in time you think is appropriate?
Not at this time, sir.
Okay, yeah, and once again, thank you very much, and hopefully you have a very good weekend. I have a note here before me that would ask committee members to have your amendments to Ms. Long, who's over my right shoulder here, by noon Monday as they apply to AGEA, and any amendments that you might have. Are there any final questions or comments from committee members? Reminder, 2 o'clock on Monday is our next meeting. We'll have Governor Hickel and Governor Knowles will be the prelude. Senator Green.
Do you happen to know the schedule for tomorrow for for the Finance Committee, because there was sort of a misspeak on the floor. That left some confusion for members tonight.
I do not, but okay. But stand by one second.
Thank you. Thank you.
I understood there was nothing.
Because I had understood differently.
So. Oh, okay, well.
I just want to be sure.
You're not going to interrupt my nap, are you?
Oh, yes. I think we're still live, guys.
And Senator Green, I just checked with the co-chair of finance. There is not a finance meeting tomorrow.
Thank you very much.
Okay, so with that, we're adjourned.
Thank you very much.